Another left-hander, so leaps over the wicket.
That's
it. That finishes the game off. Root again. This time it's a diving catch that means that England have taken this final match of this Ashes series. It squares the series to all.
It does indeed, but the Ashes are coming back to Australia, and that's the main thing. Anyway, that's the way we're looking at it at WISP this morning, given that the Poms have beaten Australia, chasing 399. It was a bridge too far. If you've won the grand final, the premiership,
it's hard to back up.
You can't back up and play a home and away game the next week and really care too much, can you?
Well, you can, but it's very difficult.
Very difficult.
Very, very difficult. And that's exactly how it appeared to be for the Australians as well.
Pete Lawler joins us, our man on the spot over there. Pete, have we summed that up, or are we just trying to make something out of the loss?
Interesting analogy, isn't it? I mean, sort of thinking, you know, did we win the premiership, or was it the, what do you call it when you win the season? Gone right out
the McClellan
of
Trophy.
The minor premiers. Dancing with your sister, a draw. Don't like it. Only happened 6 times in history. Last time was 1972. Feels flat, but probably being a bit negative because I've been a bit too close to what's been a pretty poor performance by the Australians in the 5th test. But if you look at all that came before that, it's a positive, it's a big kick. Because this team, if you said 18 months ago that this team was going to retain the Ashes, you'd have taken it in a heartbeat, wouldn't you? Because you've got to remember how far back they were coming from and how difficult it is to win games of cricket in England. No one's won a series here since in 18 years, as we all know. So to win 2 tests and to hold England to 2 tests is good. Just feels a little flat because they lost here. But anyway, the Ashes are coming home. Oh, well, staying home, aren't they?
Staying home indeed. Look, I think we take it given the circumstances and the build-up and the fact that our bowlers were great and Stephen Smith was our only batsman of any great note. Although Matthew Wade making a 2nd century in this series shores his spot up in this side when we in the summer resumed in Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. The batting was, well, glass half full, glass half empty, wasn't it? It was a disappointment, aside from Smith. They needed to bat a little better than that. Wade's done enough in the last test, but not enough to win the test. Marnus Labuschagne is a positive. But going back to Australia, and Tim, I hope you're listening, with 3 places open, as you predicted, you know, they are the only 3 who are guaranteed a start, in my opinion, in the first test. Ricky Ponting says that Warner's a lock for the first test. I disagree. There's 4 Sheffield Shield matches to be played before the start of the summer. He needs to make runs in those to keep faith with him. I'm pretty confident that he will. I don't think he's lost anything. I think he still bats all right in the nets. Just Stuart Broad beat him. Beat him all ends up this series, and Stuart Broad won't be bowling in Australia this summer, and David Warner will be very happy about that.
Hey, Pete, that's an interesting comment. I had that written down about what Ponting said at the weekend. I don't care if Warner gets another duck. He's a lock.
Yeah.
How much power do you think he wields in regard the selection of the Australian team?
It's a brave man who disagrees with Ricky Ponting, isn't it? Because, you know, he's the oracle. He's the god of cricket in many ways. I don't think anyone sees the game any better. But I would agree with him as long as Warner makes runs in the Sheffield Shield. So it was a strange thing to say when you've got 4 rounds of Sheffield Shield cricket to watch. Sometimes you worry, because you saw it happen with Ponting, for instance, that their batting just disappears. Mm. They've lost it. But in the nets, and you watch him, his batting hasn't disappeared. He's just lost all confidence facing Broad. A little bit like Ricky did facing Harbhajan Singh or Justin Langer against Murali. It happens sometimes, and you just can't solve it. And Warner was beaten all ends up, and had a terrible series. And it was made worse by the fact that they had faith in him.
Yep.
A lesser batsman wouldn't have got that much exposure. They would have been dropped. But I'm not making excuses for him.
Hey, Pete, we know how great Smith was during this Ashes series, but apart from him, whose stocks rose, do you think, during this Ashes series for the Australians?
For the Australians, as I said, Labuschagne, outstanding. I mean, I'm so impressed by that kid, and I have been for a long time, and so has Langer, but to see him come over and bat like that in England, come away with an average of 50 from, I think, 7 innings, that's outstanding. He's looked really good. I think I probably said it to you before. He looked 20 to 30% better in this English summer than he did in the Australian summer. The county cricket's done wonders for him up at Glamorgan, where he's made 1,000 runs in 5 centuries and is the highest scoring batsman in the country. Lock him in for 10 years, if I can sound like Ricky Ponting, but he's gold. He's absolutely gold. He bowls with aggression. He fields brilliantly. He's full of beans. And if you can bat in England, you can bat anywhere in the world, I reckon. So he is a great find. And as you say, Wade came good. I'm glad about that because he had such great form coming into it. He had a great summer. Good Australian A, well, great Australian A series. Struggled a little bit in the Ashes, but helped win one test and then had a compensatory 100 there at the end. So one of it was only he, Labuschagne and Smith are the only batsmen to go past 50 twice in the Australian camp, I reckon.
Makes for a very, very interesting domestic, early part of the domestic season. Hey, Pete, we've been rapt and so happy that we've been able to talk to you throughout this Ashes series on loan from the Australian, but a big part of the SEN cricket commentary team. And the most important question of the whole series, have you got your money back?
That beer currently cost me $2,300, but I'm in a 30-day resolution process with Visa. Thanks very much for asking.
Well, good luck, Al.
So I'm looking forward to coming home. Okay, I'm looking forward to coming home and watching some footy.
Look forward to catching up when you get back.
It's been good fun, fellas. Thanks very much.
Great to have you with us this morning. Preliminary final week. It is a conversation starter for Kia's 7-day sale extended to this weekend. Receive a $777 bonus across the range. Chris Fagan is going to join us. Nick Riewoldt has joined us in the chair. Welcome, Rui.
Morning, boys.
Good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, you too, mate. Good to see you. Good to see you, Timmy.
Good to see you. You look bright and bushy. What are you, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning?
Yeah,
I've like been up for a while.
I have been up for a while. Got woken up by a coughing child. And once I wake up on Monday morning early, I can't go back to sleep because I know the NFL's on and I can't help myself. So I always just roll over and grab the phone and check the scores. And once I check the scores and that blue light hits my eyes, I'm gone.
That's a trap.
What you're going to say, you know, on a Monday morning, you're that excited to come in here.
Goes without saying, Gary.
You can't go back to sleep again. Just quickly, I want to update people. I don't know if you heard this on the drive-in. Mitchum and Ringwood was a thriller and it went down to a score that was either touch on the line or not. This is from Cameron who says, I was at that game. The ball was over the line, but it was touch first, Wisp. That's new information.
So touched off the boot.
Off the boot.
The umpires gave it a no score, which is the only thing he got wrong. He should have said
touched.
So there you go. Hopefully. I'm not suspecting that that's going to appease everyone. I think whoever's on the wrong end of it's going to come for us. But anyway, hey, Rui's here for Buy My Stock. Got excess stock. Visit buymystock.com.au. Where are we starting? Friday night?
Yeah, let's go back to the start. I mean, it was we were warned, weren't we, about writing off the losers from the first week. And West Coast were so convincing, but it was hard to read too much into it given the opposition. And Geelong, I just thought, gee, if Geelong play the way that they played the week before against Collingwood, slow down the line, well, you could see in the very first passage of play when they got the footy and they looked corridor, that they weren't going to fall into that trap.
Yeah.
So they didn't throw out their game plan completely, but you could tell they weren't going to be as conservative as they were the week before.
And the decision to play Blitzars on a wing early was a thing. You're at the ground. We were doing it for radio. We just sat there going, Chris Scott, love him or hate him, he will not bend. He will not.
Oh, no.
He is his own man. It was almost an up yours to those who were having a crack.
There might have been a few eyebrows raised, but the bloke sitting next to me too, he'd gone pretty hard the week before. And look at for periods of the game, you thought, oh, this, because Gaff got hold of him for that. It was that 5 minute, 10 minute period.
Yeah, early it worked.
Yeah, early it worked. But then Gaff got hold of him over that period where he was able to kick hit the scoreboard twice. Kick two goals. And it wasn't just the two goals. I mean, he started those passages of play as well. And his breaking of the lines while Blitzars was sort of holding his width, you could have asked the question. And I was really surprised, given we thought, okay, they've played him in the ruck the first week. Now you have to revert to what you know, and you have to play him in defence because of Darling and because of Kennedy. But they backed Collar Jasny in, they backed Henry in, and they got the job done.
Yeah, no, it worked. I thought early on in the piece he was impactful, Blitzars. He was back and forward, and he was. I'd love to know exactly what the instruction was, but at various stages he'd get into the back half and take Kennedy or take Darling if that what was needed to happen, and it just sort of gave them some flexibility if you know, if Kolodziejczyk wanted to go, he could go, knowing that he had some backup, and then he pushed forward at the right time.
The thing about doing or making a move like that too is that you hope, as a coaching fraternity, you hope that that works, so that that actually then means that the opposition coaching box has to do something about it. It's not just playing on gaff, it's the influence that he might have to then start to think, gee, you know, we have to change something here to counteract that.
Well, it was Maston early, and Maston, I was watched it really carefully. He wasn't sure what to do. He was sort of going, do I go, do I not, do I stay? And he got a little bit of footy, but he was impacting more, I thought, early.
And that hesitation might be the thing that, if you look at the end result in that game, like they got off to a 19-0 start or something like that. There's 20 points in the game at the end of the night. Like it can just be the difference. That start in a final, when you're talking about the best teams, that first 15 minutes of a final can often be the difference between two sides at the end of the night.
Well, and it certainly looks that way now in retrospect, doesn't it? Because they got out of the blocks and their first quarters had been absolutely horrendous over a long period in finals, Geelong as well. So there's a bit to get through here. How much stock do we put in the emotional drain and the shock of what occurred for West Coast in the couple of days before the final?
I don't know the answer to that.
We've all played the game. How much of a distraction do you think that would have been, and how much energy can that potentially sap from the playing group?
So I only look at it from a personal. I would say not as much as what people might think from me, but I couldn't talk for how many others are affected by it. Like, I mean, Liam Ryan, maybe, you know, the boys that are really close together and work together really closely, that forward line group, maybe. From actual on-field, it has an impact because he's such a talented player. But in terms of what happens the night before and how much it takes out of you, maybe a lot, maybe. I couldn't put a percentage.
Players are pretty good at compartmentalising those sort of issues and moving on. I'll tell you what, they missed him, though. They missed his footy stuff, particularly early. That first half, the amount of good looks they had going inside 50. So I think of Kennedy leading out a couple of times. Waterman, you know, kicks it over his head. And I think it was Ryan at the other end, tries to lace him out, goes over his head. So Willy Rioli's been the best inside 50 kick in the competition this year. Kingy did some really good stuff on that in the pre-game. And so they missed his use. I mean, emotionally, there's a bit of a fallout as well. But the actual physical execution that he brings on game day, they missed that.
They went inside 50, 11 times in that first quarter, the Eagles, and had six possessions inside their forward 50 for 11 entries.
Yeah.
We spoke to the ruck whisperer, Steve Talbot, last week, and he said a really interesting thing that I hadn't considered before, and that was about ruckman, how banged up they get from week to week. And he posed the question about Nat Nui coming off, you know, that really long break, plays football, then has to front up again the week later. How did you read the battle between him and Stanley?
I think Stanley got the points.
I thought he did too.
Yep. And that was the question all week, wasn't it? What are they going to do? Are they going to bring him in? Is Blitzard's going to go back? Is he going to play? Well, he didn't do either in the end. He played on the wing. But no, I thought Stanley was good. He competed. West Coast, they didn't get the domination out of the middle that would have been a concern for Geelong. And athletically, Stanley has the athletic gifts to be able to compete, be able to jump. But it was all about, can he actually just mentally compete with him for four quarters? Well, he ticked the box. He absolutely did that, and that meant Shuey and all these West Coast midfielders, they couldn't get as proactive as they would have liked. Yo, it was a huge, huge result for them to be able to nullify that advantage or perceived advantage coming into the contest.
I know Yo went to Dangerfield and kept him, you know, quiet for three quarters, and then Danger exploded. Dangerfield's impact early in this game and on taking on Nat Nui post hit out. You have a look at that.
That was first contest on the ground.
And Timmy continued to do it. It was almost, he took it personally as if to say, well, I'll be the one to take on Nat Nui and not let him have that impact. I thought it was really a massive statement from a leader.
It was big late too.
He was huge late.
He was huge late, wasn't he? I mean, that contested marking ability for a big size midfielder, but you know, he wouldn't be a big size forward, would he? I think that's just so important. Moving forward to next week, you've got to try and find a way to mark the ball on Richmond. You certainly can't let them mark it, but if he can be doing that in the forward half of the ground, well, all of a sudden it just, particularly if Tom Hawkins isn't playing, I mean, do you toss
up? Is that
up,
the move then? Is
do you
that
toss
the
up
move?
Playing him forward?
Can you afford?
Yeah, I think so.
You start him there, Well, they did. And then if you get in trouble, you go and put him back in the midfield because you know what he's capable of doing back there.
Was it last year or the year before they started in there in a final against Sydney? They couldn't get the damn thing to him.
That's right. Yeah. So that's he went cold early.
I think it'll be the split. I mean, you can't take him from the midfield because he's so dynamic in the middle of the ground.
To play devil's advocate, where did Joel Selwood look best on the weekend?
In the middle.
In the middle. He's played a lot of wing this year. So if Dangerfield's out, you can play him in the middle. I think this is Geelong's, it's not their only chance, but it's their best chance. To play Selwood in the middle, you've got Kelly in there, play Parfitt through there, load up with class in your front half. We know trying to score against Richmond is tough, but if you've got Dangerfield, if you've got Ablett, probably not Hawkins, that's going to be your best opportunity.
So let's deal with Hawkins. How do you deal with it as from a playing group? I mean, you don't. You just, but from a coaching end, try and put us into Hawkins' head. What was he doing, Tom?
There are just moments, though, with Tom. And if you go, like, he's got a rap sheet too. Okay, so there are moments in games where he just loses control of himself. They're split second. I don't think they're decisions that are preempted in any way. They're just decisions that he just arrives at that moment, and they're undisciplined decisions. And now he's going to pay for it. I can't see. There's no way known that he can get off at the tribunal. They can mount any case they like, but the fact is that. He's hit somebody off the ball, away from the play. That bloke's gone down. Now, is it worthy of 2 weeks or is it worthy of 1 week?
He's got form this year, so that's a third. I think he's had two fines for striking this year.
He's had a $2,000 fine against the Hawks for Sicily, striking, round 5, round 11, striking Jordan Dawson, $3,000 fine. Yep.
So this is third strike, you're out.
That doesn't matter.
But
though,
it's in isolation, yes.
Ben Cunnington's had 18 strikes.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. That's why I didn't have I couldn't be absolutely sure which way it was going to go. I mean, yeah, I think the right decision has been reached by Michael Christian, but based on what we'd seen this year, I didn't have complete confidence that the system would find him guilty after what we were told to start the year that we'd stamp it out. Mm. That aside, could you mount an argument that it wasn't behind the play because he was actually leading?
No, not for me.
Like, so, and you know, might sound like I'm still sort of subscribing too much to the player's code, but as a forward, when you're being worn closely, I think it's a strike in the end, but could he not have been, you know, in the act of trying to push off and create that separation? In the end, he's just sort of nut and he's just followed through with it. And you could argue then that he was trying to create separation, got it wrong, and it was in play.
You could. And I think it'd be quickly dismissed.
Okay.
No,
I'm trying, Tommy.
I saw it, the corner of my eye stuff, right? Yeah. And then you follow the play, and then you go back. And I saw Schofield on the ground still and get up and stumble. And I thought, I thought he concussed him. I thought he's out for 3 weeks. Yeah. That's
he wasn't happy, Schofield, after the game either.
Well, probably with... Yeah. Good reason.
Yeah. But that's not always the reaction. No, Quite often the reaction is, yeah, no worries, mate. You know, I know you wouldn't have meant it, but it wasn't that sort of embrace.
Before we move on from the West Coast Eagles, do you think now that in the post-mortem of their season, they look at whether or not there was a satisfaction regarding last year's flag?
No doubt, for me. Like, to what degree, I don't know.
And it just changes your mind. It might be the 2 or 3% which makes the difference.
But it's enough, isn't it? History tells you, Tim. History tells you when you go to pick your winner for the next year, don't pick the reigning premier. Because it doesn't happen. It's happened 3 times in 30 years. So for whatever reason, whether it's they just get a little bit happy or content or they don't push as hard or I don't know.
They're not far off, though, are they?
No, but we also saw McGovern... One-on-one, a player prepared to play him one-on-one and mark against him. We saw same with Barras, one-on-one, mark against them. So they got, you know, clubs now will look at that as going forward because they were almost impenetrable through the year. But now you go, oh, hang on a minute. Radaglia marked on them, Hawkins marked. Yeah. I love the way the Geelong forwards got physical with them. Like they bodied them hard early, and I really like that.
Yeah, Barras has had a bad month.
Yes.
McGovern's had a bad 3 weeks by his standards. So we know that... The reason it's so hard to do it is, again, is because teams they've had a good look at you over summer because every team that's sort of half struggling and looking for an identity, well, the first thing you do is, well, how do the premiers play? And you pick apart their game plan more than you do others. And, you know, you could argue that why doesn't everyone try to copy Richmond's game plan? Well, Richmond didn't win it last year. And I mean, that's just human nature. Mm. But, you know, you start the preseason later. There is that element of satisfaction. We heard from Tom Barras during the year, that for a while there you become a bit directionless and you think, well, you know, we've done that once. It probably wasn't everything that we thought it was going to be, and we haven't got this lifelong sense of fulfillment that we thought it was going to be, and it's hard to get going again.
I'm going to take a break. I'll pose this question as we go to the break in terms of, you know, the ability to win back-to-back flags and what happens to your mental state. This Richmond team coming into this year's preliminary final, hungrier and more focused and more centred than the Richmond team going into last year's preliminary final? That's the question I'll ask. You can answer it after the break and we'll have a look at the Giants and the Lions. The conversation started with Nick Revolt for Kia's 7-day sale has now been extended. Fags, congratulations on the year and commiserations on the result.
Thanks, Gary. It was, I don't know, mixed emotions about the whole thing. Feel very proud with the way that the group improved this year and the way that we conducted ourselves in the finals. Even though we lost both games, we didn't take a backward step and we performed pretty well, but frustrated and disappointed that we haven't got at least one win to show for it over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, with the group, I think... when we review it, what we'll see is, despite the fact that statistically in both games we did really well on the key areas that you need to do well in, we just had little moments defensively and little moments offensively when we had the ball in hands where we lacked composure or a little bit of concentration.
That's the word that I've got written down here is composure, and that, I guess, comes with playing finals, and that's why sometimes you often hear it and you go, oh, well, you know, teams have got to play in finals before they can appreciate it, and you don't really want to buy into it, but when you see some of the things in the past couple of weeks, you sort of go, yeah, well, you know, young players do need to get a taste in the sense of just how much is at stake.
Yeah, we'll try and like hell not to buy into it, but I think it is right to just a different level altogether. And, you know, I saw some little lapses in concentration that were unusual for our players, even some of our more experienced ones during the finals, and it just goes to show that when the heat comes up, it's quite unique, and the more you can get to experience, the better. So for us, probably, you know, the two finals that we played, plus the leading games against Geelong and Richmond at the G in front of big crowds, it feels like we've amassed four games of finals experience in the last month. So that's a real positive.
Hey, Chris, good morning to you. It's Tim here.
Tim. How are you?
I'm good. The intercept marking of Haynes and Davis in the last quarter, what was going through your mind when that was happening? Did you think it was all about execution from your play? You're getting the ball in there, but they're actually picking the ball off. What did you start to think around that time?
Yeah, it was a combination of the guys delivering the ball in had other options to kick the ball to, but under the heat of the battle and the closeness of the scoreboard, I think just banged it back in. And we also had some of our tall forwards in particular, they were the guys leading up, and because they didn't get used, Davis and Haynes, good readers of the ball and the play, were able to, you know, take those intercept marks. So it was a bit of a combination of both. Sometimes I felt like our tall forwards should have just held to just enable a contest. But it's, you know, it's all good in hindsight. You lose a game by 3 points, and you know, you hit the post twice in the last quarter, and little moments during the game. You look at all those things, and you get disappointed. But no, we'll learn from it. But they're great. That's their A grade. One more thing that Davis and Haynes do, and when we played them at Giant Stadium in round 16-17, we did pretty well to take a lot of that away from them, but late in that game on Saturday night, we just repeatedly kicked the ball into the same area and repeatedly got the same result, unfortunately.
Talking to Chris Fagan, the coach of the Brisbane Lions, Martin was, I thought he was the best player on the ground on Saturday night. He didn't start the ruck after half time. What was the thinking behind that?
Would have been his rotation because he and Oscar McInerney share the ruck. So that would happen every week. It's sort of preset before the game. So that was the reason for it. We've got great confidence in Oscar as well. And the other thing was that Steph had a pretty big corky in his thigh, which nobody really knew about. But he, you know, battled on through that pretty well. But he was fairly lame late in the game.
So, Fags, this is the query I've got, and this is the art of coaching, of which you've managed to do so brilliantly for a couple of years and been involved for so long. On the one hand, you're going to have the whole of the footy world just saying how great have the Lions been and how brave and how, you know, their finals performances were, I agree with you, were really competitive. But then on the other hand, you know, there's an opportunity there that you've finished with a double chance and you haven't been able to grab it. So how do you weigh up and measure how much stick and how much carrot you give in the review?
Yeah, it is a hard one. I mean, even after we played Richmond last week, the review was a pat in the back and a kick up the bum. So we'll probably have to do the same thing, Gary. I think you just look at what you did well and what you didn't do so well straight in the eye, and don't sweep anything under the carpet, and just that's the best way you learn, I think. It's the only way I know, and I think we've got a pretty honest group, and what I've found with them, they are fast learners, and we'll take that approach again when we get the opportunity with them.
Luke Hodge, you knew Luke Hodge really well before he arrived at the Brisbane Lions, and now obviously he's retired and, you know, he's been a great of the game. What did he bring beyond what you thought that he might have been capable of bringing to this group of players?
Yeah, I think he gave more of his time than I thought he would be able to. But, you know, every week I would look across into the players' areas where the computers were, and he'd be sitting there with a young defender or a young midfielder, watching his tape with him, pointing things out, trying to help him and make him better. You know, his influence on the leadership group and their maturity over the last 2 years has been exceptional, and I'm sure that without his example, that wouldn't have occurred. And he's just so willing to give his time, not just to other players, but also the club in general, just to promote us and improve the image of our footy club. So, you know, Hodgie's one of those all-in sorts of guys. And, you know, I thought maybe in the last 2 years he might just ease back a little bit, but that wasn't the case. If anything, he went harder at it than he did in his days at Hawthorn because he knew the group was so young.
If anything, his legacy's even been enhanced further, which is hard to imagine given what he's achieved. So going forward with Hodgie, he would have options everywhere. So from a media point of view, I think there would be an option to go down that path. But from what I'm hearing you there, Fags, it sounds like he's sort of got, you know, potential AFL senior coach written all over him.
Oh, I think he has, but it's whether he wants to go down that pathway, I suppose. You've got to be half mad to want to do it, probably. But
full mad.
yeah, probably. And if you're not, it sends you mad. But I think what Hodgie wants to do over the next little while is just explore all his options. So he'll have a part-time coaching role at our club. He'll do some work in the media. He'll do some corporate work as well. And I think over a period of time, he'll make up his mind. I personally think he's got the capacity to be a senior coach. I've seen his maturity over the last 11 or 12 years really grow. You know, he understands more the nuances now of working with different individuals. I thought, you know, when he first was captain at Hawthorn, he was pretty brutal and treated everybody the same way and you know, upset a few. But now I think he understands you've got to, you know, treat different people different ways. And I just see that there's more growth in him in that area. He understands the game so very, very well, so that's not an issue. It's just a matter of whether he wants to go down that pathway or he doesn't, but he's given himself all the options at the moment.
As he ever. He might just need a year perhaps to take and draw a little bit of breath. What did Lachie Neale say to you about the contact that was allegedly made to him around his face?
Yeah, he felt contact. He didn't know. He had no idea who it was. It wasn't enough to stop him from playing on. It just caused him a little bit of disturbance for a few seconds, and he dusted it off and kept going. So
was it around the eyes? Did he mention eyes at all?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It wasn't in the eyes. It was more to the nose, was what he said to me yesterday.
Right. Okay, well, we're only guessing. We don't know quite what will happen, but we expect the appeal is coming. Who, of all the four remaining teams, who do you like most? Who's played the best footy against you guys?
Richmond. And Collingwood were very good earlier in the year, but that was, you know, that was round five, so it's hard to know whether they're going as well now as they were then. We were hoping we might get a chance to find out this week, but Richmond, for me, is the side that's in form at the moment. They've had the experience. They're tough. Their system stands up under pressure. They'd be hungry after last year's preliminary final loss. So I think the Tigers.
Chris, what do you need to add to your group to take you to the next level, do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like we've not got as many holes as we used to have.
Yeah.
And some of it will just be the growth and development of our younger players, you know, getting better for the experiences that they've had, because they've continued to improve quite a lot this year. So, you know, McCluggage has probably gone from a B grader to an A grader this year, but can he improve again? Berry the same, Witherden, Rayner, those guys. So natural improvement in the group. I think a little bit more speed out of our back end would be helpful.
Have you targeted anyone, really, Chris?
Nah, not really. We've got a few irons in the fire, but, you know, as all clubs do, we plan and prepare and see what this next period begins, which is sort of a mad part of the year, isn't it? People move everywhere, it seems now, but we'll definitely be trying to improve our team through trade and draft and just see what we can get to come to our club.
And, Fage, just a quick one. We appreciate your time. What's your advice to the boys now with preliminary final and grand final? Do you say watch it? Do you say get down there and try and get a ticket and soak it up? What's your advice there?
Oh, I think it's a personal choice sort of thing, but I'm hopeful that all of them will take the time to watch it. And by and large, most of our guys have turned into students of the game over the last 2 or 3 years. I couldn't question that part of them, so I think naturally they will. Whether they get down to watch the games live or watch them on TV, that's another thing, but yeah, we'll definitely encourage that. And as I say, the most valuable learning is that learning to get playing in finals. So you know, our young group, I think they're still the second youngest list in the competition, has had the opportunity to play in a couple this year, which is just invaluable.
Well, it's one of the great stories. We love watching the Lions. We love what you've been able to do in a short period of time. I know also you had a lot to do with Spud. We might send you up a tape of the rub that we played on the weekend. It might just give you a bit of a laugh.
I'd love to. I'd love to hear that, Gary. And I'm sorry for your loss too, mate.
Good on you, mate. Great to talk to you. Chris Fagan, the Brisbane Lions coach.